is ordinance 2020-101. It's ordinance enacting new chapter 1151 of the codified ordinances of the city and defense to provide regulations for signs. And I think at this point, Mayor, I don't know if you want me to turn over to you, or we just have Mike and Greg O'Brien go right to the ordinance.
You can go right to the ordinance.
Very good. Well, Mike, I'll let you, I know you had a lot of input, let you and Greg handle the discussion at this point.
All right, thank you, Vice Mayor. Everybody hear me okay, I think?
Yes.
Yes.
Those that remember, we tried to modify this quite a few years ago, modify the sign ordinance a little bit, and we weren't able to do that at that time. But in the meantime, between that time and now, there have been some court cases and court decisions that have would have negated what we had even done, any changes we would have done then. So what we needed to do is basically take our sign ordinance and rewrite it in such a way that the only way that you could identify signs would be by the type of sign that it is, such as a wall sign or a ground sign or a billboard, etc., that type of thing. So we went through, and there were some other issues with our sign code that I had just in the functionality of it, of the arrangement. So what we basically did was took an old chapter 1151 and more or less set it aside and took the parts we needed from it, rearranged it, rewrote it in such a way that we could meet the standard of determining the type of sign it is, and put it back together, and we've come up with this document. And if Greg, if there's anything that you want to add, just jump in. So there's a lot to it, although most of it is old verbiage that existed in the previous version of this, but has just been rearranged or relocated and put in a way that made it easier to work through, to understand for the businesses and the sign people. So does anybody have any questions on anything specific before I kind of flip through it?
So what you're saying then, Mike, if I'm understanding, is the old way and the old ordinance that we tried to work through, we would say things like real estate signs or political signs. Now we don't identify by their purpose, but rather we identify by the type of sign it is, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. The standard, and I've kind of burned this in my head, the standard that the Supreme Court verdict gave was more or less, if you have to read the sign to determine what type of sign it is, it would be unconstitutional.
Okay. Yeah, this is Greg. Mike accurately reflects, this is the Reed versus Town of Gilbert, and this was right before Scalia passed away. And it, you know, it's very rare, obviously, for the Supreme Court to rule 7-2, 6-3. But in this case, it was a unanimous verdict. So there was seven justices that really struck down the municipal code in Arizona, and really took sign ordinances, the ability to regulate sign ordinances, a great deal of that regulation away from municipalities and states. I've talked to some of my colleagues, and they're all aware of the decision. It was back in 2015, some cities are just not going to enforce their sign code. They're just not going to do it. Some have modified, but the ones that I've read that they've modified since 2015, I think, don't go enough. So if they were to enforce it, they might run into problems. And so we're trying to obviously meet the spirit and intent. I think we do with this ordinance, not trying to infringe on anybody's free speech, but the Supreme Court did give municipalities a certain limited regulation, and that's all we're trying to do here. And as Mike said, we had pylon signs and we had ground signs. It was, you know, serving on the Planning Commission, and those members that have been on the Planning Commission, those members that have been on the Board of Zoning Appeals, sometimes those two terms conflated. So we just got rid of the word grounds and pylon and use, you know, monument sign. And so it's a lot more streamlined there.
Law Director, does this give us any jurisdiction about what goes on that sign?
No.
Verbiage?
No. So as Mike said, if you have to read it to determine whether or not your regulation is being complied with, it's going to be what's called, the lawyers call it strict scrutiny. And 99.9% of the time, the government's going to lose in a strict scrutiny case. So that's why there's going to be no, you're going to go through this ordinance, there's not going to be a reference to anything that's on a sign. I think I gave this, the mayor and Jess Heiser was very instrumental in helping Mike and I on this ordinance. I think I gave them, because we were talking about, could you regulate, I think you see them out there, the Trump sign that has some profanity on it, whether you agree with, supporter of Trump or not, there was a question of how could you regulate profanity, and we can't. You know, if you have to read it, Councilman Narduzzi, to determine whether or not our ordinance complies, we're going to lose that challenge.
We're going through the ordinance. We rearranged things by the categories that we had previously, such as purpose, intent, the definitions, describing, having a definition for all the signs that we have that we reference in the code any place, changeable copy sign, manual, changeable copy sign, electronic, a directional sign, a monument sign, pole sign, roof sign, sandwich board, that type of thing, temporary sign, wall sign, window sign. Then we come up with a couple substitution severability section, which is just kind of a standard for this type of code. Compliance interpretation.
Mike, what number is that?
That's that was 1151.03.
Thank you.
This just kind of says that if one sentence or word is found not to be declared and found to be declared invalid, it would not affect the remaining portions of the code. We go down, we break out in 1151.05 the permit process. We elaborated on this to clarify some confusion and specifically identify things that we need for the architectural board of review and permitting of the signs. 1151.06 is a section that came directly out of the old code, and that is a reference to the signs near an interstate or highway that refers to the Ohio Department of Transportation.
So, Mike, if I could, just going back one section, just so council knows what we're talking about, maybe cleaning up some practical aspects. So in that section, there's probably 8 out of 10 times whenever anyone looks for a ground sign in the old days, right, we'd always say subject to a landscaping plan. Well, that was always after the fact. So we added a requirement, anybody coming in for that type of sign needs to submit the landscaping plan in advance. That way we don't have to subject to it, and the members of the BZA or the Planning Commission will have it in front of them, and they don't have to worry about if Jeff is gonna meet their expectations. Sorry, Mike.
That's all right. Then in 1151.07, we get into some design standards. These standards are more or less scattered throughout the code, and each zoning district had the design standard identified in it. So we just kind of took those all out of those, the individual sections that refer to the zoning areas, districts, and put them all in one place so that everything, we weren't duplicating everything and just creating additional words. Same thing with the measurement standards. Those things were, again, duplicated in each individual zoning section, so we just kind of took that out and put it all together in one section of the code. We address illumination. And then in 1151.10, we start on start identifying the specific zoning districts as far as what type of signs are permitted and allowed. In 1151.10, we address the single-family residential signs, the what is allowed there, wall or panel nameplate, not exceeding 2 square feet, and sign facing located on any dwelling, temporary ground sign, not exceeding 7 square feet in area or 4 feet in height per sign, and 30 square feet in total, shall not be permitted on for each parcel, or shall be permitted for each parcel number, provided such sign is not located less than 15 feet from any side lot line or 10 feet from any street right-of-way line. So we identify specifics as far as where they could be located on a residential property to provide side yardage and distance from the right-of-way. A temporary sign, we address this when a house is being constructed, shall not exceed 16 square feet. And then a permanent monument sign, not exceeding 30 square feet in sign face area, 5 feet in height, is permitted for each residential subdivision, provided it's located on the homeowners association's property and they maintain it.
Oh, Mike, just to hit on that real quick, I mean, most of our signs that go into our developments, they're more than 30 square feet, aren't they, right now?
Well,
if they're only 5 feet high, that means they can only be 6 feet wide.
Well, keep in mind that anytime anything exceeds, anytime there's a proposal that would exceed the size in this code, they have the right to go to the Board of Zoning Appeals. And the Board of Zoning Appeals could grant a variance to the code to allow them to have a larger development sign. Same thing kind of exists with commercial buildings. The signs that are typically on walls of commercial buildings exceed what we have in our code, but the Board of Zoning takes into consideration what the sign, the size of the sign, how the sign is appearances on the building, and then decides whether or not they'll grant a variance for that specific sign.
Okay.
I have a question, Mike, too, in this section, if I could. Do we say, am I missing it? Do we say anything here, or do we remain silent on, like, duration of signage? Is that something we have no authority over? So if people want to put up signs, they could just keep them up for as long as they wanted. People are having, like, say, maybe a garage sale. So they put up a garage sale sign, and 3 weeks later, there's no garage sale, but the sign's still up. Is that okay? You just can't do anything, or?
Greg, you want to touch on that?
Yeah, I can speak to that. Because the Reed case was 2015, you can imagine, the court of the district courts and the courts of appeals are starting to populate with cases across the country with sign cases. So there's been a few cases in that area where cities have lost, where in the old days, in fact, our old code said 30 days, right? Can't exceed 30 days. And courts have struck those down because obviously many of them are tailored around the political season. And they felt that was an arbitrary restriction on free speech. So if we did put a duration in there, we certainly can put in the code, and I think we do have it in here. If we don't, we should. If a temporary sign becomes dilapidated and, you know, it's hanging and it affects the, it's not about the content, it's just, it's starting to drag on the residential character, affect value, and then we're not regulating the words, right? We're regulating the structure of the sign, the upkeep of the sign. But duration is a very tricky one, where we have not seen any courts that have offered any guidance on, is it 90 days? Is it 60 days? So we intentionally left it out, except I think in one occasion with a temporary sign during the construction of a dwelling that can remain on the property, but once the occupancy permit is issued, that temporary sign is no longer available.
So
again, you would think that on that temporary sign it's going to be the name of the builder, but again, it doesn't have to be.
So the same thing would hold true then, Greg, if people had, like, you get a roof put on and your roofer wants to put the sign identifying his or her business on your lawn, that could be kept on indefinitely then?
Yeah, Mike, right? We didn't come to
that could be, but typically the customer only wants to leave it there a week or two because they don't want to keep pulling it out to mow the lawn around it.
So, right, that's true.
You know,
all right,
so those kind of extinguish ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, I mean, we could look at, do a deeper dive. The courts are just going to look at it from a reasonable standpoint. Then you have a practical standpoint that, how do you measure it so someone could remove a temporary sign for a day, right, and then they put it back up after a day? I don't think we have the resources to monitor that gamesmanship.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Going on, 1151.11 addresses U3 city-owned and public-owned facility building signs, which basically exempts any signs that are erected on the city from the code for those purposes. Then we move into the 1151.12, which is the U4, U4A, U6A, the business district signs, which are, which not a lot, nothing it basically has changed except the organization of the signs in there. And as Greg mentioned, we eliminated the pylon sign and ground sign terms and just went to a monument sign, addressing their location in the section there, and also identifying the 35-foot triangle location that they're not permitted to be in. We have a section in there on the sandwich board type of sign, and the restrictions in with the sandwich board signs. And again, if anybody has any questions, just speak up. 1151.13, the U5, the U5 HR office district signs. These terms are again taken from the old code and just rearranged. They're the same type of changes were made in there as far as the pylon and ground sign chain. 1151.14 is a U5A, U6, the manufacturing and industrial district sign. Same type of things there. Then we get down into the 1151.15, the last portion of the code, which addresses some generalities. 1151.15 addresses signs for special conditional use permits that are issued. Identifies how those properties, how their signage is determined. You go back to the original zoning of the lot. And that's the determining factor, and anything that doesn't comply with the original zoning of the lot or their use would be going to the Board of Zoning Appeals. 1151-16, a planned mixed-use development. Those signs would be submitted as part of the PUD plan, and those would all be approved and identified by, I believe, the Planning Commission. I believe Council also approves that as a whole site development plan. Maintenance assigned addresses, as Greg mentioned before, that they should be maintained or they'd be removed by the city or at the expense of the permit holder or property owner for not being maintained. Non-conforming signs, all permanent signs conforming as of to the regulations prevailing on the effective date of this chapter but does not conform to the regulations of this or subsequent amendment shall be construed as a legal non-conforming sign. That's basically saying that any sign that exists today is considered compliant, that anybody that has a sign that is under the old code, that maybe there's a tweak or a change in the new code, they don't have to change their sign to comply. Now, if they took their sign down and were going to put up a new sign, then they would need to comply with the current code. See, any temporary in that section also is the last paragraph there. A temporary sign, legally non-conforming signs to the regulations prevailing and affected in this chapter, and these are temporary signs, but which does not conform with the regulations of this or a subsequent amendment, shall be made to conform with the regulations of this chapter or a subsequent amendment within 30 days of the adoption of this chapter. And what that is saying is that a temporary sign that is installed, such as some of these signs that are up on some of the office buildings that are a full 4x8 sheet of plywood, that is an oversized sign. That once this chapter or the sign code is enacted, that sign would have 30 days to comply with the new size requirement. So that's what that section is saying. 1151-19, abandoned signs. Any sign accessory to an abandoned use. This would be, say, a store that may be left. They would have 14 days to remove their sign. And otherwise it would be, remove it within 45 days or 14 days after notification by the building department by certified mail.
I think it was good that was changed to 45. I was reviewing the old code and I saw 90, and 90 seemed really at the outside end. I think 45 is far more adequate.
Yeah, especially for an abandoned use.
Yeah.
The removal of signs, any permanent sign that is ordered to be removed by the building department shall have 14 days after receiving their notice. Otherwise, the building, the sign can be removed by the city with all costs charged back to the owner for the removal of such sign. A temporary sign in existence of this section does not comply with the chapter and all other signs directed display without legal authorization or to which a legal non-conforming sign status has not been established shall be removed within 10 days after the delivery by certified mail or personal service. That's for temporary signs. So the temporary signs, we kind of tightened up the time frame on that versus the permanent sign. Specification plates, 1151-21. That's that came out of the old code section, and that's basically a manufacturer's installation plate identifying the amount of voltage that the sign uses and the amperage, any electrical. That's more or less a building standard, and it was in the old sign code, and we just carried it forward. Now we have prohibited signs in 1151-22. Signs are prohibited in public right-of-way, any post, pole, hydrant, bridge, wall, tree, other surface located on private property, or public property, rather, or across any public street. except as authorized by the mayor or building official. Any unauthorized temporary signs shall be removed and disposed of. Those would be all the little signs that you see. I'm trying to think of, everybody knows the window cleaner. Everybody knows Bill or somebody. I don't know him, but everybody else seems to know him and puts a sign up around town. So those are the signs that we snag, and I've got a half a dozen in the back of my car right now to put into the dumpster. No balloons or search lights, no gas-filled balloons, air-activated socks, graphic socks, flags, or search lights can be used. We just kind of expanded that to include the socks or the air-activated graphics. Pole signs have been outlawed for quite a while. They've been deemed prohibited. Changeable copy signs, manual or changeable copy signs, electric are prohibited except as expressly set forth herein. Those would be the electronic changeable copy signs. And roof signs. And roof signs were signs that would go on top of a roof. I can't even think of an example to give you right now, but it would be like a structure. You see them downtown on some of the buildings up above. On top of the buildings, it would be a metal frame structure that the sign would sit on top of. Exemptions to regulations.
Mike, I have some questions, please, before you go on.
Yes.
I noticed in our 15 legislation, we had a section just before this was 1151.20, and it did talk about vehicle advertising limits, like when people put their cars up with signs. So because I don't see it in here, does that mean that that's now allowed?
Well, we run into the case of you've got many vehicles that have wraps on them,
right?
Which is the Panera delivery truck, mm-hmm. or the delivery car. Slyman's has a food truck that has complete graphics all around it. I don't know that we could restrict those type of things. And Greg, maybe you can respond to that better.
Yeah. If I could just add, Greg, if I could first. I understand that. That to me is like part of a business. I guess I was looking more for when we have somebody who is maybe running for an office and they take a vehicle and put a big sign on it in a very visible place, or if they're opposed to something, an issue or whatever, they might put up a sign for it, or if they're for it, like the schools maybe even wanting to put up. I was just curious if we're allowed to have those.
That's a good question, which I do not think that we discussed, Jessica, Mike, and I. So I will look at it quickly, and I will let you know, Councilwoman Kapustin, if you want to make an amendment, we can do that quickly. I just don't know the law on it.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. And one other question related to this. Looking back to an earlier section of 1151.07, with the very last letter in there says location. Signs must be erected, placed, and maintained, located the property upon which the use is located. So, for instance, if you had a, how do you determine property? So, for instance, if we look at Rockside Corners, and I know the businesses, and I don't want to in any way harm the business, I just want to try to understand. So if we say that we have a store that's in the very far corner of Rockside Corners or something, there, and they had a sign promoting or identifying something, usually they're temporary signs, out at the street by Rockside, that's still considered their property? Is that how that's evaluated?
Generally, the owner of the shopping center would apply for and receive a permit for the sign, or the tenant would have approval as the assignee. So those situations are provided for. I guess the one would be the new Topgolf sign at the corner of Rockside. That type of sign Topgolf could not have without coming in and asking the BZA for a variance. and seeking that. Our concern with, and that is specific language we did put in there, because we talked about it at a great deal, and I think it was Jess who brought it up, is we didn't want businesses who were at the end of a cul-de-sac have the ability to, without the city's permission, put signs up, whether permanent or temporary, all the way up front without some input from the city.
Okay, and to speak to the same point too then, so if it was, because you see a lot of this usually cropping up around where like the freeway exits and entrances are, where understandably, again, I realize where businesses are struggling, so they want to put their signs there to make them visible. So if you were, say, I'm just going to throw this out because I saw them the other day, if you were an Applebee's and you are further down Rockside Road, you would not then be able to position your sign near the entrance ramp to 77, correct?
Yeah, that would be, we wouldn't even need to get to that section because that's definitely within the city's right-of-way. It's definitely on the highway's right-of-way. And if it's not, and it's slightly a little further north, it's definitely on, it's trespassing on another private property's.
I would love to suggest, because there is one there now, and I certainly don't want, as I said, I want to emphasize, I certainly want to do anything to support our business and not to deter them. So I would like to suggest, if we haven't already, and maybe you have a mic, I don't know, not only with any changes, but when something like that occurs, where we see something that is an unexpected area that's not allowed, rather than just removing it, do you then go the next step and let the business owner understand the why behind it?
Depending on the what's involved in that, area temps must have put up 25 signs over a weekend a few weeks ago.
Saw that, yeah.
And I pulled them all out and I went in there and I told them, I said, listen, I said, you guys got to stop. I said, you're not allowed to go put them in Seven Hills. You've got, you know, we don't allow them here. All I've been doing is taking them up and I'm going to throw them out.
Mm-hmm.
And all you're doing is wasting your money. So just stop putting them up. And it seems that they have.
Yeah, good. Because I think that communication piece is, and I know you got a lot on your plate, but I think that communication piece, whether it's verbal, whether it's written or something, is important, because I don't want our businesses to think we're being overly restrictive. But at the same time, I just don't want it to get junked up at some of those highly visible points, which
right.
I think is easy to do when you look at other cities. And I don't want that to be us. So.
Right.
All right.
Now, I will say that during this whole, the last 5 months, six months, whatever it's been, the whole COVID thing, the restaurants, we've been giving them a little
latitude
in their fines to try to encourage them to, you know, to be able
be
to
be sustainable. I agree with that.
Totally. Yeah.
No, I totally support that. Okay. Thank you.
You will. The next section is exemptions to regulations. Following signs shall be exempt. Signage which is an integral part of the original construction of vending machines, fuel pumps, or similar devices. Cornerstones or permanent building plaques displaying the date of construction, building name, or similar information. Street name signs. Holiday decorations displayed for customary periods of time. Special signage determined by the Board of Zoning Appeals to be reasonable considering the intent and regulations of this chapter, and painted or wall murals or other similar artwork if approved by the Board of Zoning and the Architectural Review Board. These regulations shall not be applicable to any signs erected by the city for public purposes. And the last few pages are a chart that is still a little bit of a work in progress, and it's just to get some of the wording corrected. We had a chart in our previous version, and Jessica thought that it would be advantageous to have a chart in this version also, just kind of a quick reference for sizes and number of signs and setbacks and et cetera. Are there any questions?
I have another one, please. Okay, so electronic signs are covered then where, Mike?
In
illuminated or no?
No, electronic signs are covered in the prohibited.
Yeah, they're precluded.
So they're precluded with the exception of the ones we have that are existing?
Correct. The ones that are, we have existing that are permitted. There may be one or two that are out there that are not permitted. We may have to talk with the individual property owners.
Because I know that was a really big part of our discussion, as you well remember, I'm sure, back in 2015. That went on for weeks, it felt like. So now we're just saying no to those.
Well, and I think this goes with Jess, you may want to jump in, but I don't want to steal your thunder, but she comes from another community. And the proliferation of these electronic signs, especially on main thoroughfares like Rockside Road, may not be something. I mean, you know, eventually you could get to the point, if you don't preclude them, to the point of, you know, a Las Vegas type, you know, signage. And if you did, if council wanted to circle back with that at some point, we certainly can regulate timing issues and lighting issues. You know, as far as the ambient light, how far it travels, without getting too restrictive, we could always regulate, although this has not been gone up to any courts, regulate the timing of messaging, meaning you can only scroll, but you can only change your messaging every, you know, 5 seconds or 7 seconds.
I remember all those entering into our discussion back in 15, you know, I'm content with it. I just was wondering if what we were thinking that along those lines. Okay, thank you.
That's identified in 1151.22, the changeable copy signs.
Okay,
changeable copy signs manual or changeable copy signs electronic are prohibited. Mm.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Vice Mayor.
Yes, Jim.
Have we shared our proposal with the Chamber of Commerce and gotten any input from our business community?
No, we have not. Jess was on the, ad hoc committee with Mike and I representing the business community, and a lot of her changes, a lot of her requests were to streamline sometimes the delay in getting this stuff approved through the city, and to make sure that she was very insistent on Mike and I added like charts and diagrams so that it would be easier for a business person to come in to understand our code and so they're not having to get professional help for one and expense for that, and they can expedite their requests. But we have not, other than have her on in every meeting, we have not had Chamber of Commerce.
I'm not sure. Hi, this is Jess. I'm not sure having the Chamber of Commerce discuss that might be our best avenue. They're typically our smaller businesses and don't necessarily involve themselves in the nitty-gritty of the sign ordinance.
I guess I just think as a matter of a principle that they represent the business community, so we might want to know what their thoughts are on some of these things, that's all. Second question was, with respect to the political yard signs, I've read and reread this a few times. So with respect to this, so you've got uniformity of size on the political signs, but political campaigns don't care what independence says. So if I'm a judge running for office and I put out signs that are, 1 inch bigger, and my resident puts it out because they want to support that candidate, unbeknownst to them, that's somehow against the law. I mean, I'm just wondering the enforceability of that and the prudence of that.
Well, we wouldn't. I know you know this because you read the code. We wouldn't designate political signs. It's all signs, and it's really is up to the majority of council on what you feel the dimensions for any temporary signs should be, but. Whether it's political or whether it's that someone has a beef to advertise about, or someone wants to, talk about their realtor or whatever, that's your limit. So We chose a reasonable size for, you know, signage so people could read whatever they want to put on the sign from the street, but yet not be so obstructive to the neighborhood. Whereas, you know, you certainly want to, my recommendation is certainly whatever majority of council decides, but you certainly don't want to not put a dimension on there because, you know, after Reed versus Arizona, I mean, you could have a billboard type sign in front of your house, and I don't know if the residents are going to like that if there's someone's trying to move into the neighborhood or sell their home or something. Despite what's on there, I you know, since Reed, I, from a legal standpoint, I really don't care what anybody puts on, you know, because legally we cannot, you know, opine on it.
That are identified in the residential district were taken from the old code when it referred to real estate signs. 7 square feet in area and not higher than 4 feet in height. So
and we,
those are sizes that we were, you know, use that as a guide.
And Councilperson Drakus, we just to let you know that we didn't operate in a vacuum. We certainly didn't restrict. You know, there's cases now on the books that communities that restricted signs, saying, "Oh, you can only have one temporary sign in the home, in your front lawn." Well, those regulations have been struck down as an unreasonable restraint on free speech. But the courts do allow you restrictions. So I think ours on a normal lot, although I don't know if we did the math, you know, you could have up to 10 or 15. What I will call normal, you know, signs that we see every day, especially during the political season. So it's hardly a restraint on communication.
Can we touch base on the sign, like a political sign on the side of a vehicle again? Because I kind of know a councilman that did that this last fall. Is that like an issue? Is that
Whatever's on the side of the vehicle is not going to be an issue because the city's unable to, you know, to delve into the content. But I think I'm going to look at Councilwoman Kapusta's on whether or not there's any guidance on whether or not vehicle signs. My guess is we won't be able to regulate it except for when something clearly is a sign, and that is the wheels are off, it's on blocks, it hasn't moved in years, you know, or you get the trailers, but we've covered the trailer signs because it has to be on property that, you know, you own or you right. lease, so.
I mean, because I remember back as a kid, you know, my grandfather would put signs on the side of his truck for Mayor Kurtz when he was first running, and several councilmen that, you know, used to sit in our seats that we have now, so. I mean, that's something that's been going on for years. So I didn't know if that was going to be, you know, a future issue.
Well, whatever's out there, we will find. But I guarantee since 2015, it's going to be the issue of signage on a vehicle versus what the content of that sign on the vehicle is.
Okay.
So can I go one step further? I guess it would be for the law director on the removal of a sign that's not legal. So what process do we have to go through? So I'm trying to minimize that process so it doesn't cost us a ton of money in legal fees.
Unfortunately, Councilman Narduzzi, we have very little choice. We would, this would be a zoning violation, no different than any other zoning violation. And we would have to, hopefully 99% of the community would, you know, say, okay, well, that's, you know, it's equally applied across everybody and I'll comply with it. For those 1% people that just refuse to do it, we need to decide, council and the mayor needs to decide on how to pursue it. And if you are going to pursue it, you're going to have to file an action in court to get a court order to remove the sign because it violates our zoning code. Sure. And we would obviously make sure we would have guidance on making sure that if we did that, that we're on sound legal ground to do so.
So just like Mike said that he picked up the signs for temporary help or whatever that sign was and he throws them in the back of his car, what's the difference in doing that and removing an illegal sign in a residential property or a commercial property that is...
Well, because while someone has illegally put a sign on, you know, city or state-owned property, and they don't have any legal rights to that property and to that sign, obtaining the signs, Mike is storing the signs, and they can come and get the signs, and if they don't want to come and get the signs, then Mike can dispose of them in our code. And also in our code, there is a provision that allows someone, if they don't like the city's decision on their sign, they can appeal that before the Board of Zoning Appeals. So let me give you something. If they get a letter from Mike saying that you're violating our zoning code, it's not that, you know, they have no recourse. They have procedural due process. They can file a timely letter with the Board of Zoning Appeals, and the Board of Zoning Appeals will act as a quasi-judicial to hear their case and decide their matter. So we were covering the procedural due process aspect with that procedure in there. But the ones in the city's right-of-way, which are distracting to and could cause traffic accidents or obstruct traffic view, we are sufficiently protected there.
And Ken, you had a question?
Yes, you know, still on this removal of signs and 1151.20. Mr. Brown, you just referred to sort of a due process for removal of signs, and I don't know that that's particularly elicited in 1151.20, but first point is 1151.20 starts out by talking about removal of permanent signs, and essentially the building department can either directly or hire someone to remove those signs. And there's no mention of any due process in that particular section. So,
yeah. So in 1151.20, the last sentence, it says any sign owner may appeal the anticipated removal herein in accordance with the provisions set forth in City Ordinance 1365-17. I'll save you some reading. That just says they file a letter with the Board of Zoning Appeals chairperson, and the chairperson would set up a hearing where they would set forth that. We need. You know, we're not going to allow the building official to go out candidly, and you know, maybe this isn't the appropriate forum, but we're not going to allow the building official to go out and take down signs before we know we're in legal grounds to do so, and until we've exhausted the due process rights of the sign owner.
Just to be clear, 1151.20 does say the building department can do that once it goes through the process for a permanent sign. What about temporary signs? It's a little less clear to me as to what the removal process or steps are for a temporary sign as opposed to a permanent sign.
Yeah, I wrote a couple of notes here and circled a few things. We gotta clean this up. It'll be all signs.
All signs, okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Dale.
I have a fairly substantial list. Mike, I asked a question earlier on. I'd never got a response related to a dumpster sign. I know that the dumpster disappeared. It was a political dumpster sign, but it was on Brecksville Road. What was the follow-up on that?
As you know, just stated, the dumpster disappeared. The dumpster, I don't know why the dumpster was there. Typically, dumpsters are there because somebody has a fair amount of trash to throw in there. But by the time I got to it, it was gone. Although it was painted and had a political sign on the side of it.
Are dumpsters covered in the sign ordinance?
Every dumpster that I know of has a sign on it.
I understand, but I'm talking about what someone chooses to put on a dumpster, as far as political or otherwise.
What I don't know that that would be covered in the sign ordinance. That would be a dumpster. It would be no different than a car having Ford on it.
My next question relates to church signs with movable letters. I'm not talking about an electronic sign. In what section is that covered? I know that was a big issue back in 2015.
That would be an existing sign, and it would have the right to continue to exist.
Okay. Telephone poles in the right-of-way. Does the city have the right to control what goes on a telephone pole?
Those poles are in the right-of-way, and any signage on the poles is either done by the Department of Transportation. There's no other signage to be on those telephone poles.
So basically then, what choice does an individual have that's going to do a yard sale, a garage sale, once in a year event?
So out of a courtesy to the residents, if someone's doing a garage sale, we kind of acknowledge the fact that they're doing their garage sale, and then Thursdays and Fridays, we just let the garage sale signs exist. Come Monday, when the garage sale was last Thursday, they get removed if they haven't been removed already.
So I guess the question goes back to, why are we creating the restrictive rules when once we've created the rules, then we have a list of exemptions? We're not changing
anything as far as the right-of-way signage rules. Those are currently in existence.
Yeah, Councilperson Vervirkin, I can answer that question. We are not going to come up with a perfect ordinance based upon the restrictions the Supreme Court has handed down. We cannot put an exception in saying all yard sales, because for us to put an exception in for yard sales, we have to read the sign. And can't do that. We're just going to have to rely on the good community services, and we're not going to selectively enforce, but I think what Mike is saying is, you know, he only has himself and very limited people, and no one has any intention of making a living being the sign police. We're just trying to put together a rational, reasonable sign regulations to provide guidance to both our residents and our businesses on what the city hopes will be complied with.
The property in front of our home, say on Brecksville Road, the city's right-of-way goes through and includes the sidewalk. Yes?
If you're asking me, in most cases, it'd be within that, yeah, the what is it, 35 feet? 30 feet, 6 feet?
It may vary from area to area, according to what Don Ram told us related to Brecksville Road as they looked at that. Does the resident pay tax on that property?
I don't know if that sidewalk is part of their legal description for their house. It's included, you know, their lot is taxed, so whatever on that lot is taxed. But I'm not an appraiser. I don't know if the finance director's on here, because I know he's an appraiser. But I don't know if sidewalks are somehow removed from the taxable valuation or increases taxable valuation.
Well, part of the reason I asked the question is, if I own the property, and I own the property that goes into the area where the city has the right-of-way, but I'm precluded to have a sign on the property I pay tax on, but it's covered by the right-of-way? That seems kind of counterintuitive.
Well, in a common sense, I mean, if you want to put a sign up that's going to be anything that you would think's not allowed to be there, put it on your property. I don't understand what you're talking about inches here. So if you put it on, you know, the side of the sidewalk between the street and the sidewalk, or you put it on your property, what's the difference?
So you remember Council Burke when I said, well, 99 point some percentage. Here's where it might, so that you have to have a compelling governmental reason for a regulation. And the compelling government reason, without even going too big of a deep dive here, is you have to have unobstructed, safe rights of way for the public as a whole. And if you allow signs obstructing that, both in visual and be able to move freely within the right of way, that's the purpose off the top of my head for that regulation.
Well, one of these questions relates to political signs, in which the political sign may have originally been placed in a person's yard with their permission. They went out to mow their yard. The sign was then moved out into the right of way, and then the sign disappeared from the right of way. But if it's still their property, that seems counterintuitive. I know what you're saying, Tom. And obviously, me being a person that puts out probably more signs than many people, just the idea of restricting to a point, particularly political signs, particularly at this time. I mean, doing a sign ordinance when we are 6 or 7 weeks away from a very hotly contested election can surely create concern from maybe half of the residents, feeling that we're coming up with this sign ordinance at a time during election proceedings. So, you know, I'm just kind of wondering about the timing as it relates to, it might be a good time. I mean, it might be best to deal with something like this after an election, but there definitely could be ramifications as far as how it's interpreted by a fair portion of the people, feeling like our efforts towards doing the sign stuff, a typical resident is not going to go look through the sign ordinance to try to understand what's going on.
Yeah, Councilman Verka, if I could respond to that. I think it was Councilperson Senek who, when we were passing the moratorium on the electronic sign code, said, well, he's in favor of us looking at our sign. He didn't want this to go into another year. At least that's my interpretation of it. Our goal was to try and get this many months back so we wouldn't have any concerns. But then COVID hit. I could resolve that issue by saying, go ahead and pass it either in October or November, just don't make it effective, you know, for 30 days, and then you're beyond the election. So I understand the timing, but people have to educate themselves what council is doing in these very challenging times. It has nothing to do with the election. It's just, it's a timing issue. So we can abate any concern if someone doesn't want to take the time to investigate, ask a single question, and make the ordinance effective 30 days after its passage, and then you avoid the whole November election, arguably, right?
That's correct, Mr. Vice Mayor.
Yes, Mayor.
Yeah, that's correct. There's no political agenda. We started on this, as you'll recall, early in the year. COVID hit. This isn't something that just evolved overnight. We've been working on this for months. And so, yeah, by the time it gets passed next month, it'll be moot point. We won't enforce anything till after election anyway.
So we're looking to vote on this issue at the October meeting, or are you looking to just vote on a November meeting and that?
You know, I don't think it's a, I don't think it's a, if it's really political, if it's not political, who cares when you vote on it? You vote on it when you believe you're comfortable and ready to vote. And if you're not going to vote for it, then you're never going to be comfortable anyway. So the purpose of this is to discuss, to have input, to fully vet this so that it's easier next, next month or yeah, next month.
Ken, you know, this thing was kind of built by committee and it's evolved over time and now it's kind of coming to the end. But I think we, I'm on the outside of it, I look to the committee or to you there to restate what I'm putting in my words. This is being done to just bring better organization to our existing sign codes. There's no particular subterfuge. There's not a lot of substantive changes to our existing signage laws. This is just a rewrite of the code to make it more easier to follow for Mike Giroux and the building department, as well as any tenant or anybody who may want to come for the sign. The what we have now is kind of a gobbledygook of stuff, and this just puts it all in a much better order. And again, I would ask the committee or you, Mayor, who are more on the front lines of this than I am, to if that's truly what's happening here. Maybe we should, if I could start this meeting again, I would start with, why are we here? What's the purpose of all this?
That's exactly right. It's to clean up and clarify and make it very logical for people to read and to enforce.
No, I see again, no problem.
I'm sorry, Mr. Vice Mayor, but as no, what you said, you know, this is something that will evolve. Like, this has taken a long time to evolve. Once we have something and we watch how it works, I'm sure we'll be back to council in the future some other time to say, hey, we need to tweak this again.
And this was written in mind, compliant with the Supreme Court decision.
Right.
So I see that, thank goodness we did have a little wait, because otherwise we'd probably been changing, you know, something we passed or would have passed a few years ago. I see no reason why we can't vote on this in October, make it effective 30 days after the passage and everything. And by that time, the election's over and, you know, it's set. There'll be enough time between now and the next election to allow people to review it, even for us to tweak it if necessary. I don't know if there's any other opinion from council.
I just would say that having lived through the 2015 review of it, I think the document we have now, and maybe in part thanks to the Supreme Court, is far more doable. You know, when I look at something like this, I want it to be something we could communicate well, or our staff can, who could be like our building inspector who work with our community. I think it needs to be realistic, equitable, and enforceable, and I think we've hit on a lot more of those now than we had with previous attempts, so I'm happy.
And I'll just assure City Council, this is not the last time you've seen this ordinance. We're going to apply it, and then if things arise from a practical standpoint, we're probably going to bring it back and tweak it here and there. I mean, it's if you talk ordinances, sign ordinance is probably practically the one that affects, you know, that everybody touches. So I just want to assure you that I'm not professing, Mike's not professing, and Jeff's not professing it's perfect. We'll just have to tweak it as we go, and if things need to be changed up or down, we'll do it.
This is definitely, many ordinances are living, breathing documents, and this is one of those ordinances that has to be changed and modified as just as time and things evolve. So this is a good jump from the last time the sign ordinance was passed, which I'm not even sure how long ago that was, but it was quite a while ago, I believe. And I think this will be a good jump start, and we'll move forward from there.
Thank you, Mike.
Having sat on Planning Commission and Zoning Board, and you too, Dave, most of these are just common sense changes. These are things that came up that in front of a zoning board, or we dealt with on Planning Commission. They're just common sense changes. I don't think it was meant to be any kind of political motivative, you know, and at all. It was just, it's just a way of cleaning up, making things better than what we had before. And I think that's part of our job, is to do that. And I think, Mike, I have to give you congrats. It's not easy going through all these, you know, different meetings of all these different things for signage. So, I mean, you obviously spent some time on this, and I congratulate you on coming up with this. And like you said, it's a working document, and I'm sure we'll change it again in the future. But for now, I think we should be good to go.
Thank you.
Very good. And this still allows the flexibility for the anybody wants a variance to go in front of the BZA, and the BZA has been very good at vetting out practical difficulty and the different standards, Greg, that you've explained to them that they use, that especially in the commercial sense, or that they could go in front of that board, and if they show enough cause, they'd be able to get a variance on their requests. But so I see nothing. If there are any further questions for either Greg or for Mike? I don't see none, and hearing none, I believe that we've discussed this. This will be on the agenda at the October meeting. Though I suggest that maybe we have it to take effect 30 days after the passage of the legislation. So this way it takes that lay of the hotly contested presidential race, you know, out of the picture as far as, you know, any kind of motivation to attack this legislation.
We will make that change.
Very good. Any other questions before we, I guess we have to get out of the workshop and then come back to the you know, the special council meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, very good. So I'll entertain a motion to adjourn the workshop.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. So we are going to be coming back to the special council meeting with the agenda that has. I only have one question, Mayor. I know when we discussed last week, I thought there was going to be some legislation regarding Schaff Road. Has that changed then, or?
Well, I'm not sure if Don is on now or not.
No.
I don't see him on there.
But I think the goal was just to make sure we were going to take the money out of existing maintenance contracts.
I see. And so there would be nothing, no legislation needed for that.
It may just be a motion to. Let me find out from Don. But I was under the impression that a motion just to utilize that money for a Schaff Road grind and overlay would be in order.
And then I did talk to one of the fellows that has a business up there. They said that there's a sign from the county saying there's only a certain amount of weight. I guess if businesses abide by that, there'd be no traffic on Schaff Road at all going up and down the side of it.
So we could definitely affect one of our bigger taxpayers for sure.
Yes. So that's a dumb. I don't know how we can.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they rebuilt it. Maybe they never took the sign down.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Well, everyone, let's get out of this meeting and come back and readjourn at our special council meeting.
Good night, all.
Thank you.